Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Thank you, Lord. Are we loaded with our information here? Team, well, I'll filibuster for a minute because I was in Congress. We know how to filibuster. I do want to thank everyone for joining us here this evening. I'm pleased to announce that we have the parameters of a conceptual agreement on the fiscal year 2025 state budget. This is quite an accomplishment, and first of all, I want to acknowledge the extraordinary public servants who made this happen. Members of my team who've worked long and hard, many, many weekends, long nights, early mornings, and they made this become a reality. And I want to thank particularly our Secretary to the Governor, Karen Persichilli Keough, extraordinary work, and I will be forever grateful for what she has delivered for New Yorkers, and counsel to the Governor, Liz Fine, who made sure everything was just proper as it should be, and I want to thank her for all she has done. And Director of State Operations, Catherine Garcia, luckily there was not a blizzard or a major storm during the budget process, or it might have been delayed, but always on the ground. And Chief of Staff Stacey Lynch, who's our secret agent to negotiate some of the hard deals as well, and I want to thank her. And of course, our first time to have as our budget director, Blake Washington. You did good. We'll keep you. Well done. Well done. And to everyone in the budget teams, all the agency staff, all the people who spent, I walked in one night here, is so late at night, and there are about 40 or 50 people from our team and the leaders team and the speakers team, and no one complains. They're just, as long as you give them food, they're very happy. So to all my partners in government, we work together to make a budget that will make a difference in people's lives. Andre Stewart Cousins, our majority leader, and Carl Heastie, our speaker, their staffs worked around the clock as well, and I want to make sure they get a message of appreciation from all of us. I thank them often, but it never feels enough for the sacrifice they made, our teams made. And they deserve a lot of recognition as well. Each of us came to the table with really strongly held beliefs. But in the interest of our state, we pulled it together to deliver in a really collaborative way. And I will say, you don't always see that here. You don't always see that in our capital. So in my state, the state address in January, I made a promise to New Yorkers that I would fight the right fights and deliver common sense solutions. And we would tackle the thorny issues that other governors have ignored. In so doing, we would move New York forward. Now, I always ask the tough questions about housing and public safety and even how we teach our kids to read, and always said, can we do better? You know, why is it this way? And I heard way too often, for my taste, that's how it's always been done. 30% statewide. And while we were able to make remarkable progress, there was still more to do. And that's why, once again, our budget sets aside over $347 million, record funding for gun violence prevention programs, so we can continue these proven efforts. We all know there's certain categories of crime that remain stubbornly high. So we're taking the same core strategies we employed to drive down the gun violence, because we know they work, starting with retail theft. A few weeks ago, I stood right here with small businesses and bodegas and their workers. Every single day, they have to contend with brazen thieves who burst in, threaten people, and rip their products off the shelves with impunity. I made a promise to them right in this room. I said we'd fight for them, never forgetting that they were the essential workers during the pandemic who ensured that New Yorkers had what they needed. Food and medicine, people in drugstores, keeping New Yorkers safe and healthy, even to the detriment of themselves. So to reduce the scourge of attacks on these vulnerable frontline workers, I insisted on increased penalties for anyone who assaults a retail worker. We got it done. We've also agreed to common sense legislation to make it illegal to foster the sale of stolen goods online, and allowing prosecutors to combine the value of goods stolen across different stores when they file larceny charges. We got it all done while securing $40 million to establish dedicated retail theft teams within the state police, in DA's offices, and local police departments. More than 100 troopers we will assign to build our state police smash and grab unit. Never had one of those before. Hope we don't need one for very long. And they're supposed to break up the increasingly sophisticated retail theft rings. You've also heard about a lot about the illegal cannabis stores. They have plagued our neighborhoods, flagrantly violating our laws, selling to kids, evading taxes, and even offering products laced with unregulated chemicals. They needed to be shut down. We are up against thousands of illicit shops, as well as bureaucratic inertia, and didn't have the laws on our side. So we changed the law so we could finally fight back. Going forward, both the state and localities will have the power to padlock the doors of these illegal vendors for up to a year. That means while the due process plays out, the padlock stays on. Now let me be clear. Before we feel the results, this is going to take some time. They won't disappear overnight. But eventually, New Yorkers will see the change they've been waiting for in their communities. This will clear the way for the Black, Latino, women, immigrant, veteran, and justice-involved business owners who run the legal shops the people our cannabis laws was intended to empower. And this is just the start of how we're keeping people safe, including $36 million to give law enforcement and district attorneys more tools to prosecute domestic abusers, $35 million in grants to strengthen security at higher-risk community organizations and houses of worship against hate crimes. And we added more than 20 additional offenses that can now be prosecuted as hate crimes, from gang assaults to gun charges to rape and sex trafficking. And we're putting the brakes on those who drive ghost cars with faked or doctored license plates, all to evade our tolls. We'll also invest millions to reduce the number of repeat offenders and prepare them for reentry after their sentence. Another issue that is always top of mind in the city is the migrant crisis. New York State and New York City continue to carry the burden of sheltering right now over 65,000 migrants. 184,000 have come to New York over the last 2 years. I've said all along, it's up to the federal government to address this crisis. But Republicans in Congress, including 10 from New York, refused to act. They rejected a bipartisan bill, bipartisan, to send over 2,000 more agents to the southern border. Why'd they do that? Because the former president told them to. It would have stemmed the tide of migrants and provided significant financial relief for New York and Border Patrol for the northern border as well. So while these Republicans grandstand and gaslight the public, we're on the ground dealing with the realities of their inability to act. So that's why the problem continues. We're providing $2.4 billion to assist, a $500 million increase, and help the city manage this unprecedented humanitarian crisis. It's the right thing to do for the migrants, and it's the right thing to do for the city to protect quality of life for its residents. I think many of you know that when I encounter long-existing challenges, like housing and crime, ignored by leaders before me, I first put a spotlight on them. Can't always solve it at first or even the first year, but I put a spotlight on it and then I take action. Education is yet another example, beginning with the most fundamental skill of all, reading. With this budget, We're throwing out debunked curriculums and getting back to basics. Using phonics and reading comprehension and other effective techniques, we're also setting aside funding for teachers to be retrained to make this transition. That's how we start to set our kids up for success. And that's why I'm also proud that we increased K through 12 funding, school aid by the largest amount ever, $5 billion increase over 2 years, and fully funded foundation aid for the very first time. And this year, once again, we're supporting our students and our teachers with record funding, investing $35.9 billion in our schools, a $1.3 billion increase over last year, the highest amount in our state history. So now, between the historic investment from the state and the infusion that was there from the federal government in pandemic aid, we've determined that many schools have more resources than ever before. At the same time, there's been a 10% decline in enrollment over the last decade. So we have many schools serving fewer students while receiving the same amount of money from the state. And as we speak, some school districts have considerable cash reserves that exceed the amount they're allowed to have by law. So while schools and working class communities are limited to no reserves, others are doing just fine. So now's the right time to take this on and to begin to fix the way we fund schools, to make sure they're equitable, fair, and are doing the right thing. So I'm really glad that in conversations with our leaders, we've agreed to take a significant step this year to improve the school aid formula and to adjust the unsustainable built-in rate of growth with our foundation aid formula. Other elements of foundation aid need a closer assessment. So the legislature and I have agreed on a plan that makes long overdue adjustments to the funding formula in next year's budget. This includes the hold harmless provision, which ensures up until now that school districts never receive less funding than the year before, regardless of population loss, their need, or the size of their surpluses. To accomplish this, the Rockefeller Institute of Government, in collaboration with the State Education Department, will conduct a comprehensive study on school funding with a focus on foundation aid. They'll track down where the money is going to waste and how we can get every student the resources they need to learn, to thrive, to succeed. Because in the long term, it just doesn't make sense to keep paying for empty seats in classrooms. And we can't continue to have large sums of money sit in school district reserves when that money could be used in helping students in low-income neighborhoods and communities of color, or return to the taxpayers. And we can't continue to fund our schools based on politics. Our decisions must be guided by where the need is greatest. That was K through 12. Let's talk about higher education. Access to higher education continues to be one of our highest priorities, especially when what parents want to do, sending their kids to college, collides with the reality of ever-escalating costs. And that's why we're making changes to the tuition assistance program, increasing the minimum award from $500 to $1,000, and raising the dependent student income limit from $80,000 to $125,000. So with this budget, we're making college more affordable for middle and lower-income New Yorkers. Let's take a few minutes to talk about how we're protecting New Yorkers' health, starting with their mental health. Last year, we proudly announced a landmark $1 billion plan to add 1,000 new psychiatric patient beds inpatient and to greatly expand outpatient services, build thousands more supportive housing units, launch new programs especially targeted toward our children. Our investments are already making a difference. And this budget will allow us to build on our progress in a number of ways. First, we're going to help individuals with serious mental illness get the care they need, Beginning this year, we're requiring hospitals to screen patients for mental health conditions, risks like suicide, violence, substance abuse, before they're discharged. And we're requiring that follow-up care be coordinated before the patients leave the hospital. And we're serious about these new rules. That's why we're investing $7 million on monitoring and compliance to ensure that the hospitals abide by these new regulations. We're also investing $31 million to support people in the criminal justice system who are struggling with mental illness, so these individuals can have lasting well-being instead of cycling in and out of the justice system. Secondly, we're addressing the youth mental health crisis. I believe if you invest dollars now, you give them the help they need now, they won't need a lifetime of help later. It's a smart investment. So we're investing $19 million in mental health support for school-aged children. And finally, we're making sure everyone has access to a baseline level of mental health care. How? By setting standards for reimbursement rates for outpatient services and issuing new regulations that'll mandate insurers to provide out-of-network service. That's for them, for individuals when timely appointments aren't available in network. Now, in addition to mental health, we're laser focused on improving overall health outcomes for New Yorkers. First, we're taking action to reverse the disturbing trend with the rise in maternal and infant mortality. Every year, hundreds of New York families experience this unfathomable loss. And the reality is, Black and brown mothers and babies are disproportionately impacted, in part because they're not getting the prenatal care they need. It takes a lot to leave a job or schedule an appointment. You're making minimum wage and you're supposed to take a half a day off for a prenatal appointment. A lot of families, a lot of moms can't do that. With this budget, we're making New York the first state in the nation to offer paid prenatal leave so expectant mothers can have the checkups they need to ensure a healthy pregnancy. We're also going to be addressing the proliferation of sometimes unnecessary procedures like C-sections and requiring time for nursing mothers to pump. So we're going to keep working on ways to keep moms and infants alive and safe, but also make sure we're tackling the risks they face as they get older. I've talked about this before. Drownings in our state have reached record levels in the last few years. Kids are particularly vulnerable. Drowning is the leading cause of deaths for 1 to 4-year-olds across the country, and the second leading cause of death for 5-year-olds to 14-year-olds. And there's stark racial disparities. Black children are 3 times more likely to drown. We'll make sure that young New Yorkers know how to swim, build new pools across the state with a construction program that's unrivaled since FDR's Work Progress Administration. As we're talking about health care, I also want to address Medicaid and how we fund it. Last year, we invested over $400 million to invest access to preventative and primary care. We made the largest Medicaid rate increases for hospitals and nursing homes in 2 decades. This year, we're providing $3 billion to support distressed hospitals and continuing our $20 billion multi-year investment to build new healthcare infrastructure, expand coverage for seniors and pregnant New Yorkers, and increase the home care worker minimum wage. It's well known that Medicaid is one of the single largest expenses in our state budget. So we also have a responsibility to rein in these costs. Because even though this year our revenues are higher than anticipated, we can't expect that to be the case every year. We must scrutinize Medicaid spending so we can continue to provide the essential services to people who need them the most. We made significant headway with this budget, increasing oversight of the Consumer Protected Directed Personal Assistance Program, a program that the costs have gone up over 1,200% just in the last couple of years. So we'll be instituting a single statewide fiscal intermediary. What that means is we'll be like states like California that have one fiscal intermediary managing this program, not the 700 that have proliferated in the state of New York. This alone will save us $500 million every single year and allow us to start putting controls and guardrails in place for what has historically been a very underregulated program. That's how we ensure that the people who really need it get the best quality care while eliminating the waste, fraud, and abuse. This alone is an enormous victory and will ultimately yield greater savings over time. But let me be clear, we're not done yet. A few months back, my administration established the Commission on the Future of Healthcare. They've been tasked with uncovering long-term solutions to the challenges confronting our healthcare system. They will have concrete recommendations in time for the next state budget. These experts will help us build a sustainable healthcare system for many years to come. So as we're closing out here, I want to just talk about a few other ways we're providing a better life for New Yorkers with this budget. You know, we know life is hard. Cost of living just keeps going up and up. So that's why we're raising the maximum benefit for paid maternal medical disability leave, which has been frozen for 35 years. Too often, disabled New Yorkers aren't given the support they need. They're forced to struggle alone. That legacy of neglect ends with this budget. We're also supporting $1.6 million New Yorkers who are diagnosed with diabetes, who struggle to afford the medications that their lives depend on. We'll be banning copays for insulin for anyone in New York on a state-regulated insurance plan. No one asks to become a diabetic, and actually no one asks to be extorted by greedy pharmaceutical and insurance companies looking to make a quick buck off their pain and desperation. We're also protecting New Yorkers from the burden of medical debt that too often plummets them into bankruptcy by advancing legislation to protect low-income New Yorkers from being sued for medical debt, capping monthly payments and interest, and expanding hospital financial assistance programs. We're also promoting the health of our environment and fighting climate change, planting 25 million trees, investing $500 million in clean water infrastructure, accelerating our transition to clean energy, and making progress toward our bold emissions targets. This budget places a particular emphasis on union workers, the very people who do the hard work of building our state. So we'll be putting them to work on significant transportation projects and making sure that we continue to institute strong labor standards. Also, over the next few years, we're sending $50 million in temporary municipal assistance to cities and towns outside of New York City. That's money that's often used to pay for essential workers like police officers and firefighters. And we're also helping rebuild our depleted public sector workforce at both the state and local levels with changes to the Tier 6 pension program. I spent 14 years in local government. There was a time when there was a lot of demand to become a state or local government worker. Sadly, those days are over. So I know what these investments will do to encourage people to stay, and we can recruit more people to be part of the extraordinary work that our public sector workers do every day. We're also securing the long-term health of our economy in many ways. I'll talk about one in particular. Here in New York, we stand on the cutting edge. We always do what's never been done before, and we do it better than anyone else. That's why we're setting our sights on making New York the home for the burgeoning artificial intelligence industry. AI is the single most impactful technological commercial advancement since the invention of the internet, with a global market projected to reach $1.3 trillion in just a few short years. So I've said all along, whoever dominates the AI industry will dominate the next chapter of human history. And we want New York to win the race for the future. That's exactly what our AI initiative, Empire AI Initiative, will accomplish. We're going to make New York the first state in the nation to purchase artificial intelligence supercomputing power at this scale and place in the hands of our leading academic institutions and our universities to foster an ecosystem of innovation, research, and growth. This will position New York at the forefront of this industry for decades to come. Our budget allocates $275 million to make this become a reality, and will be supported by $125 million in private and university funding. This initiative will drive countless new discoveries and make New York State a national center for AI research. This will support our brilliant young students as they launch new companies and products when they graduate, and literally transform the way that New Yorkers live their lives, all for the better. And we're ensuring that that change will be powered right here in New York. Other economic development projects, we're going to have over $200 million invested to build four workforce development centers in Syracuse along the 190 corridor, where all the new jobs are coming, semiconductors, need I say Micron, and so many other areas where leading the nation in creating these great paying jobs. So we want to make sure that we can secure the good paying jobs in advanced manufacturing. People need to be trained. People need to be training. That's why this investment is so important. Everywhere you look, from our biggest cities to our most rural hamlets, you'll find New Yorkers working the jobs of the future. Let me end with this. In my State of the State address, I said something I believe with all my heart. New Yorkers are more powerful together than we ever would be on our own. And we saw that with this budget process. Yes, with spirited debate, but there was almost unprecedented collaboration between myself, the majority leader, the speaker. And we proved that we can come together for the good of our state, and we did. So young families can finally buy that first home in a community they want to. Mom and pop retail shops will find peace of mind and focus on what they do best. All expectant mothers can access the prenatal care they need and deserve and prepare to bring new life into the world. So seniors are never left to choose between life-saving insulin and paying their rent. So every child can attend quality public schools where they're taught to read and put on a pathway to success. Enacting our vision will make New York safer, more affordable, more livable, not just today, but tomorrow, and ensure that people across our state can still have optimism and hope that better days lie ahead. We'll continue working day in and day out together to build our New York, our future. Thank you.
Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.